Before turning to Julia, let me just mention two quick things. One, we're going to go a little bit beyond the set hour because we started a little late. And two, we're going to start the Q&A session right after Julia speaks with about 30 seconds from each of you, advice to Secretary Shulkin on what actions the Secretary and the VA can take that will most be transformative for the health system as a whole and the status of interoperability.
Wonderful. Julia? Thank you. I'm happy to round out this terrific panel. Well, I recently experienced a care transition. I moved from University of Michigan to UCSF, and in transitioning the care of my family, I felt like I really saw the full interoperability spectrum. There were moments of without special effort where it worked beautifully, and there were moments of insane amount of effort, printing out, pulling up my provider portal on my phone and showing it to my provider. And I think for me, it really epitomized where we are today, where there are moments where it does work well, but there's still a lot of work to get every piece of information where it needs to be at the time that it needs to be there. Let's see. So I honestly think that interoperability is one of the most complex things that we are trying to undertake in healthcare today. And it's because, and this is a very sort of clinical decision-centric picture, I think it would work for any application of interoperability, but if you think about the fact that all information that might be relevant to a clinical or healthcare decision is quite fragmented today, and then you think about getting all that information to the decision maker, there are several points at which you can really hit barriers. The first is that we need to make sure that the regulations and incentives are there, simply that those environmental and contextual factors are where they need to be. One, a very hard problem. Even if you were to get that right, you then need to ensure that the structural capabilities, the technical capabilities are there to move the information. Even if you were to get the information where it needs to go, you need to ensure that the processes are in place so that the people who are needing to see that information see it at the moment they need to make that decision. And last but not least, you need to make sure that that information is meaningful to them. They trust it, they believe in its accuracy, and that it actually is going to get incorporated into a clinical decision. And so each of these levels spans from the broader environment all the way down to that individual decision maker, and they are all dependent on each other. And you're not going to change a decision unless you get each of these levels right, and they're all quite complicated. And so I think, again, when I think about the fact that I completely agree with Mickey, we've made tremendous progress, but we're trying to do something that's very hard, and at the end of the day, we have to get each of these levels right if we're going to have an impact. So I'm just going to share with you a little bit of data today on each of these three topics, the current state of interoperability. Unfortunately, there's no number that will, you know, tell you exactly where we are today, so I'm going to show you sort of some different takes on where we are, speak very briefly on what we know about the impact of interoperability, and then spend some time on the market barriers to interoperability. So this is data that actually comes from the same source that Chantal showed you, a national survey of hospitals. In the four core domains that ONC has outlined around the ability to find, the ability to send, the ability to receive, and perhaps most importantly, the ability to integrate data without special effort. And so what you can see, this is from 2014 to 2015, is that we see some increases over time, but where you really see least progress is perhaps in the most important domain around integrating information, making sure that information is integrated into workflow and able to impact a clinical decision. And so that's, I think, an area where we need to continue to focus effort. These are asking hospitals, are you able to engage in these, which tells you sort of one thing about their capabilities, but it doesn't really tell you how often are they engaging in these. So this is a different way to think about where we are as a nation in terms of interoperability progress. There's a stage three meaningful use criterion that says when a patient transitions care, how often is their summary of care record electronically transmitted to the place that they're going next? Meaningful use requires at least 10% to get credit for this criterion, but this is the distribution of actual performance across U.S. hospitals. So what you can see is that the majority of hospitals are in that first 10 to 20% bucket. They're getting over what they need to do for credit, but they're not going anywhere near what I think we all hope to achieve, which is in the 80, 90, ideally 100%. So again, many of these hospitals have the capability to engage in exchange, but are they routinely doing it when patients transition? And the answer is not yet. This is some new data that actually we just recently collected that I haven't shared with anyone, so you're the first group to see this. But it really stems from the fact that we should not be agnostic to who hospitals are sharing with. Who do we want them to share with? We want them to share with the other hospitals that they share the most patients with. And so if you are saying, yes, I can engage in interoperability with that hospital with whom we just have a few patients a year, I'm much less excited about that than if you're engaging in interoperability with that hospital that you are routinely sharing patients with. And up until this, we'd never asked hospitals about specific other hospitals. Are you able to exchange with this specific other hospital? So what we did is in every market in the U.S., we used Medicare data to say who are the hospitals that are sharing the highest volume of patients with each other, and then we sent them a survey saying, are you exchanging information with each other, a specific named hospital? And so what you see in this data is that when we ask, to what extent is your EHR fully interoperable with the EHR from Hospital X, the biggest sharing partner in their market, 63% said not or a little bit interoperable. 15% said somewhat, and 21% said largely or fully. So again, a different way to look at the numbers, but from a much more patient-centric perspective, right? Because that's who I care about in terms of sharing. And then we asked them, compare how you share information with that hospital to how you share information with other hospitals. Is it better, worse, or the same? And what you can see is that 23% of hospitals said their interoperability capabilities are worse. 48% the same, and only 17% said better, that they'd made a specific investment in that high-volume sharing partner. We also got some unsolicited comments on the survey that I think are telling. I took the survey, but you referenced our direct competitor across town with whom we rarely interact due to competing regional partnerships. Very competitive relationship. They are our chief competitor, and their corporate structure has not made interoperability a priority in this market. So again, I think telling about the fact that we're making progress, but we have not made these incentives strong enough yet for these hospitals to really say what's in the best interest of the patient. So let me talk just very briefly about impact of interoperability, which I think is the ultimate end goal here. There's actually quite a large number of studies that have tried to quantify the impact, and it's really all over the board. There are studies that don't show an impact of interoperability, some that do, and it's just sort of at this early stage where there's just not, I think, that strong relationship that we've seen. And I think the panel has talked about why, right, that these we haven't sort of done the full spectrum that I showed on my first slide, where we're actually impacting a clinical, you know, clinical decisions regularly. I think there is pretty strong evidence for reduced utilization in emergency department settings, and some indication that that's due to faster delivery of information, that interoperability is successful in getting information in front of clinicians faster, and in the ED setting, that really matters. I think perhaps the most telling is that, you know, where these capabilities exist, usage is low. And so, again, we're getting data where it needs to be, but we haven't solved that workflow and decision-making integration yet that gives that information an opportunity to impact a clinical decision. Oh, and let me just spend another minute on market barriers to interoperability. I think we've seen this come up in sort of different studies over the years. The first time it came onto my radar was a study that interviewed hospital CEOs, and a quote in there that that they perceive patient data as, quote, a key strategic asset tying physicians and patients to their organization. In some studies I've done, we found that, for example, for-profit hospitals and those in more competitive markets are less likely to share data. And recently, we've been talking more about information blocking, which I think is an interesting concept because it suggests that that incentives are not just weak, in which case interoperability would be low on the priority list, but it would be on the priority list. Information blocking suggests that that incentives are actually perverse, right? I can do interoperability, but I'm going to make a business decision not to. That's a very distinct issue, and I think we need to recognize that there is a difference between weak incentives and perverse incentives. And so I think information blocking was helpful in forcing us to think through that distinction. So I did a survey of HIE leaders across the nation. So these are people who are running HIE efforts and HIOs to ask them about this concept of information blocking. Do you actually encounter it and see it? And what you can see here is that 55% of my respondents felt that they saw EHR vendors doing this routinely, and 30% said occasionally, and 25% of respondents said that hospitals and health systems do this routinely, with another 35% occasionally. Information blocking is a tricky issue. Again, I know I wouldn't put a lot of stock in these precise numbers, but I think it gives us a sense that this is being experienced out there in the market. So if I were to sort of look towards the future and say, what do we need to focus on here? I think this sweet spot is where we are simultaneously working on increasing incentives to engage in interoperability and lowering the barriers to doing so, making it easy so that you don't need to justify such a high investment in it. And I think that's what the TEFCA has really put into focus, is to say if we make it easier to engage in exchange, if there's a single on-ramp, then the incentives to do so don't need to be as high. And so I think it's sort of constantly balancing this incentives with lowering barriers. But I personally believe that I think we need to spend a lot more time thinking about how to increase the incentives. And I would put it as a question to later panelists in this room who are CIOs. Do you feel like interoperability is a stay-in-business issue for you? If you were to invest not a single dollar more in it from this year to the next, would that really impact your bottom line and other key metrics for you? And I think the answer to that question will be really telling in terms of the impact of this potential report. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia.